Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Your first one's on us. Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling, the podcast. I'm Mark Rigadonna.
I'm Richie Byrne.
Soul Joe.
And we got Soul Joe on the what are they called? On the threes and fours?
I didn't even know I was going to be a part of this.
What's the threes? What do you mean?
Handling the mics and handling the recording.
That's what they call it?
I don't know.
Sixes and sevens?
He's on the ones and twos.
Behind the scenes. Back to you guys.
Well, anyhow, welcome to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. And we're just talking right before we started recording. We were talking a little bit about our last episode.
Yes, our first episode.
Our first episode went very blue.
Mark and I are not known as really blue comics.
Not at all.
And yet... We went as blue as possible.
We went out of a scale of 1 to 10 dirty, we went to 15.
Yes, easily.
Yeah. Well, easily. Our guitars go to 11.
But it was necessary for what we were talking about.
Yes.
Which was the point we were trying to make about comedy.
Yes.
That we don't have a problem with being blue. It has to have a reason.
Yes, and we did have a reason.
And we had a reason, and it just happened to be on our first podcast.
Maybe we should have saved that for later, but... Hindsight 2020.
You know, like when actresses say, I won't get naked for a movie unless it has a real reason in the movie.
For art.
Yeah. That always makes me laugh.
We did this for art.
Yeah, we did it for art. So, we used the C word for art. Whoever art is, I don't know, but screw him.
Well, and we also were talking about porno, which I think was...
Yes, porno came up in our first...
First episode.
First, yes.
We talked about the C word and porno.
So it's out of the way. Look at it this way.
It's out of the way.
It doesn't have to happen again.
The rest is downhill.
It doesn't. I will tell you a story. Do you guys know Sarah Rothberg, Comedy Cures?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't personally know her, but I see her doing a lot of events with her.
Yeah, I do a lot of events. And she has a great company, Comedy Cures. And they bus in terminally ill patients and their caregivers and give them a day of comedy. It's really amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
I
have to talk to you because this weekend I worked with
you
two
actually
guys.
She would love you.
I worked with two comedians in Ohio, and it wasn't on purpose that they both the situation was I became friends with these guys separately, and then I happened to have just worked with them back to back. And the one guy has cerebral palsy. And he's really funny. Shout out to Ryan Yex. He's hysterical.
Okay.
And he comes out on a walker, and he can't, like, he has a hard time walking, and he comes out on the walker, and he actually, the funny bone asked if he had music he wanted to come up to, and he had the Proclaimers, I would walk 500 miles.
That's funny.
He goes up, and he has to have people help him. He gets him off the chair, and they put him on the chair on stage, and they have to bring the mic over to him. And by the time
they did the same thing with you because you were drunk.
But by the time they got him the microphone, he opens with, well, that's my time. Thanks for coming out.
That's good. Imagine that. Well, we got to help the guy with cerebral palsy. We got to help Rigadonna. Well, what's wrong with Rigadonna? He's been drinking.
He's like Jim Morrison. You get him on stage. Once the crowd starts clapping, he'll wake up.
But why is he in leather pants?
I'm like Jim Morrison close to the end. And I mean bloated in a tub of ice.
Yes. But so wait, what does that have to do with?
Oh, so also I worked with another comedian the following night who he has MS and he's in a wheelchair.
Where the hell were you working? A hospital?
No. These two guys, they were great comics, and they both live in Ohio, and I worked with them back to back.
Maybe they think you have a debilitating disease. Maybe it was a show.
Let's get a guy with cerebral palsy,
a guy with MS, and Mark Rigadonna.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if we can handle Mark. He makes the crowd too sad.
And we will bring the funny.
Well, then Matt Onesti, who is the other comic, shout out to Matt. He's hysterical too, and he makes jokes about his disease and everything. And I was thinking, well, you brought up the Comedy Cures, and I'm thinking these guys should perform for those guys.
Oh, that's interesting.
That would be really cool, you know.
I don't know. I could mention it to her. Are they both overcome? Are they clean?
Yeah, but they both overcame.
Are they from New York?
No, they're Ohio.
Oh,
guys.
Well, that'd be tough because she only really does both shows in New York.
Okay, we'll talk business after.
So yeah, really.
I was just thinking.
Look at Rick and Donna trying to get these guys work.
Second episode, he's giving shout-outs.
Yeah, really? What the hell's shout-out?
You know, this wasn't your show or the purpose of the storytelling.
Yeah. But I do a lot of shows for Sarin. And when you do those shows, you have to be clean. You have to be squeaky clean. It's a big thing to her.
Yeah.
So she did a benefit for her charity at Gotham a few years ago. And it was, you know, it was Gotham show, but it was, you know, all the people there were, the money was going to her charity. And she had me on the show, and she said that it blew her, it was so weird to hear me curse. You know, and it, like, she's like, why is Richie cursing? And she goes, oh, and then I remembered, oh, wait a minute. This is really his act.
This is his nightclub act. This is his corporate.
Yes, yeah.
That's
yeah.
So funny.
Yeah, and like it totally threw her off. And she said it was just odd to hear you cursing.
Why
on
is
stage.
Richie acting weird?
Yeah, why is he doing that? Is he having a seizure? Okay. What's happening? Yeah, it is. It's a cool. I actually had a guy come up to me and said, "This is the first time I laughed since I found out I was going to die."
Wow,
that's heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine that.
That's a heavy one there.
But he was smiling when he told you.
Yeah, he was smiling when he told me that. And I thought, wow, someone finally finds me funny and they're not even going to be around.
They're not even going to be fans for long.
Can you start telling people now about this? This word of mouth isn't going to last very long.
No, that's a true story. I'll never forget. It was one of the most amazing moments
that's
of my career.
Yeah, that's like where the hair stands up on your neck and you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's, I mean... Not to compare it to this, but it's the similar feeling that you get. Like when I do a lot of shows for Armed Forces Entertainment.
Right.
And when you're out and you're doing a show for these guys who haven't seen an American for a year because they've been on deployment. And then they just come up after and they're just so thankful. And they're like, dude, they, you know. And the other thing that's funny is about these guys, it's like hats off to them for what they're sacrificing. But they're... thanking us for coming to tell jokes.
I used to do comics on duty.
Yeah, and you're just
a
like...
Tour, and it's that always
we're
amazed
only here
me.
For a month telling jokes. Yeah. You are here for a year actually getting shot at.
And they'll say that and the fact like, that you guys will come out here, you're like, what?
Well, and it also makes me kind of laugh that they're like, we're just so happy that like you'd come out here and support us. I'm like, oh, you don't know. The entire country is supporting you. Like, there is nobody that is like anti-troop. Everybody loves.
Yeah, but see, you actually went. Where'd you go? You went to.
I've been to the Middle East 3 times.
Yeah.
I've,
my tour went to Spain.
I did the Spain Portugal tour.
Well, here's what happened. We started it in America, and then it went Spain, Japan. Korea,
well now that's
Italy. I mean, well now, but this is 15 years ago. Italy. We went to all these beautiful countries, right? And then, they were like, "Hey, Rich, I got a phone call. Hey, Rich, we're going to Afghanistan." I'm like, "I just got the Sopranos, and I can't." And I did. I couldn't do it because I got an episode of Sopranos. But it looked like I was like, oh, "I'm not going there. I'm not going to the desert. Screw you, people."
Our first tour was Iraq. And then they started sending us to like the South Pacific, which was gorgeous. But they're literally, these guys are on islands and they have nothing.
Nothing.
So like as gorgeous as it is and as awesome as it is, you realize like they're probably bored to death. You can only go tuna fishing 500 times before.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
So, but then when they sent us to Spain and Portugal, and of course I have zero bad to say about Armed Forces Entertainment. I'd do anything for them, but. When they sent us to Spain, it was like, there's so much to do here. Why would they come to the comedy show?
Yeah.
There's so much awesome
We
things.
Drove through a park in Spain, and it was nighttime. And I'll never forget this. The guy who was driving us shut his lights off. It wasn't a soldier. It was a guy. I forget who he was. And we go through this park, and we go, what? He goes, wait for it. Wait for it. And he turns on his lights, and there's just
girls lined up with their totally naked, like they're lined up in on the road of the park, and they have like their coats open, they're naked, like they're prostitutes. It was the funniest thing I ever saw in my life, and it was almost like. Like when I turn my lights on, we'll see the bugs. Like these girls.
You did see a couple bugs.
Guys could never do that. Girls.
It was so funny, dude.
Now you're telling the story.
It was so funny.
We'll have to do I don't know what that has to do with this. That has to do with military stories.
Yeah.
I think we'd have some.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of friends that have some good ones.
Yeah,
too,
we do. We should bring in some guests.
So that's what we're going to do throughout this show. It'll be Richie and I consistently, but once in a while we'll bring on a guest.
Telling stories and, about storytelling. And the title?
Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling, because that's our three favorite things.
Which is our three favorite, yes. Yes. Mark and I are very fond of libation.
Yes. And now here's a question for you. Do you tend to like or do you dislike, because this is a big thing in comedy, when somebody tells street jokes to you? Like after a show, somebody will say,
I dislike it.
You dislike it. See, yeah. I'm somebody, I love it. I think there's nothing better than sitting at a bar, having a couple cocktails, and people just telling street jokes.
I do a lot of, shows, senior shows, and,
they can't remember their jokes.
That's great. No, I can't wait for that letter from the seniors.
Don't worry. They use mail.
Yeah, because you know how many
you
know how many of those will listen to the podcast. So when I do a senior show, I actually, if you don't tell a couple of street jokes, they get angry.
Yeah,
like they literally get angry.
What are your go-to street jokes?
And oh,
I love how you kind of cut the head off at the pass, or however you say it. Like you know, eventually they're gonna come up to him. Have you heard this one? Have you heard
but
this one?
They do.
So Richie stands up and goes, "Have you heard the?"
Yeah, but after the show, inevitably, someone will find me to tell me a joke. I will always listen to those jokes because once in a while you get a good one.
Yeah,
you know,
Larry Miller has a podcast. And every episode, he tells the joke of the week, and it's a street joke. I love it.
Really?
I cannot wait for him to get to that part of the show.
It's funny, because that's weird that he does that, because I was thinking, for years, I've been thinking about, when I do warm-up for Dr. Oz show, having a joke of the day, and just telling
it.
A street joke, and I never do, and I should. It's hard in warm-up. I'll tell you a great story. Last season, William Shatner was on. And we had a technical glitch with something that we needed for the screen. And we had to stop shooting. And Shatner had just hosted Gotham
Live
on Access TV the night before.
Right.
And he was telling Oz, oh, I hosted.
I remember he was on that.
I hosted last night and blah, blah, blah. So Shatner's sitting there and we're waiting to get this glitch. And we never have this happen, ever. And Doc turns to Shatner and says, give me a joke that you told last night. So Shatner tells, and it's a street joke. And Shatner tells it, and it got, and everybody, and Doc tells a street joke. Dr. Oz tells a street joke that he got from me. And that got a laugh. And Oz looked at me, goes, your turn. So I tell a joke. And when I finish, I look over and Oz is staring. I go, yeah, I kept that one for me. I never told you that one. Just because, yeah. So then it went back as Shatner told another street joke. Oz told a street joke. I told a street joke. Went around three times, and I go, you know what? When I woke up this morning, if you told me I was going to be telling street
exchanging
jokes street with Dr. Oz and Captain Kirk, I would have told you you're out of your mind. Like, how cool is that?
That is really cool.
It was so cool. And Oz had them tape it. He told me, I'm going to get you the tape. I'm going to get you the tape. I forgot about it. I'm gonna have to see if they still have it anywhere. Cause how cool is that?
That is something that should be on your reel,
dude. Well, I know.
Just like,
I know.
Going back to this story though, I guess you wanted to do like quick, little like jokes, street jokes. But it's so funny that you didn't go head to head with their street jokes and your real stories.
Yeah, well,
but it's a different sport.
It's a different sport.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, everybody says when you're it's comedy.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I get it.
I mean, there's nothing better than
football and soccer.
Yeah, it's
right. There's nothing better than when someone goes, two guys walk into a bar.
I love
you just know.
Right.
I get so excited.
I love when comics tell me street jokes.
Yeah.
Like, you, if a comic says, I got a street joke, you know it's going to be.
There's times.
And you know it's going to be one you never heard before.
Yeah.
You know?
Sitting at the comic strip, there are times like Vic Henley will walk in and just out of nowhere just bust out a street joke.
Really?
And the whole bar goes.
He's also one of the best storytellers I've ever heard.
That Vic and Pete Corielli.
Pete's a great.
Our guy, DC Benny, that are just so good at storytelling.
Yeah.
The best in the business, and anybody.
Is me.
Anybody listening, you should look him up on The Moth. DiStefano.
I don't know him that well, but I know who. I mean, I know him, but I never knew him to tell stories and stuff.
He started doing The Moth storytelling shows when he knew, and his one man show before he passed away was all about storytelling.
Right.
And he has these stories where you are in tears. Yeah. There was a time.
Yeah, I didn't really know Mike.
Angie and I were in the car once. Angie's my wife, and we're pulling into the driveway. And as we were pulling into the driveway, he was telling the story about how his wife was dying. She was in the hospital, and it was a dream of theirs to have a Harley Davidson. And he went and got one and came to the hospital, and she was in a robe with the ass hanging out and had the IV thing. And drove her around the parking lot while she's holding the IV. And like, you're crying your eyes out, but he's also hysterically funny.
Right.
So you're crying, and then you start laughing, and there's just like snot coming out of you. And it's right. Like, wow, that's powerful.
Yeah. You know? Storytelling and street joke telling are an art.
Yeah.
And when I started doing these senior shows, they wanted me, and it's funny because in the last podcast we were talking about, you know, you got to decide when you're an artist and when you're not,
yeah,
right? And yet I couldn't do it with this. The guy who set up the shows was like, I need you to tell street jokes.
Yeah, tell a couple.
And I'm like, and I was literally, it's the only time in my career I was like, no, I'm an artist. I don't. And he's like, they really want, and so they liked me. I was doing the shows. They liked me, but they didn't love me. And he kept using me, mainly because I was clean, which,
yeah,
you know, a lot of comics, it's hard, yeah, and it's hard to believe after that last podcast, but I was clean, and
but it was about somebody else being dirty.
He wanted to book me. They do theme shows, so they had a 2-week theme, and it's daytime shows, so you want that money, you know.
Yeah.
It was a 2-week theme on St. Patrick's. The day, yeah. So he wanted. He goes, Richie, the only thing is, you got to tell Irish jokes. You got, and Jay Black. Do you know Jay?
Yeah.
Jay was like, "Why are you so opposed to this?" He said, "You're a great storyteller. You're a great joke teller. Why are you against this?" What? He said, "You should do it." And he convinced me. And I went and I found a lot of Irish jokes and just destroyed these people. You know,
yeah.
And still did my act, but everyone, you know, I go, you know, where
sprinkled some stuff.
Yeah,
in.
And since then, I've always used street jokes for these, and you can feel like I'll be doing my act, and you can feel them. Like, is he almost done with this so he could tell another street joke? You know what I mean? Like, it's the funniest thing, and I'm like, well, why was I opposed to it? I go at night and I do clubs, and I don't tell street jokes.
Skip the foreplay.
Yes, we just we don't care about
just
your mom.
Take me upstairs and bring me home.
Yes. You're very nice, polite. You hold the door. Pull my hair.
It's the funniest. It's really, you feel them.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a thing, you have to make a choice when you certain gigs, you understand what they are and you abandon the idea of what we think we are. Because I open for a lot of bands and a lot of.
Which must be so hard.
Unless you look at it as what you're doing. I'm not saying I'm doing stand-up before a band. I go, I'm getting the crowd ready for a band. So I abandon that idea that I have to kill like it's a comedy club.
Right, right.
And I just give them what they want.
And what kind of bands?
Metal.
Yeah.
Hard rock.
So it's more of a warm-up thing.
Yeah, it's basically getting the crowd riled up.
How long do you have to do?
Usually they understand that it's going to be rough. You usually are doing between 5 to 15 minutes. It's not,
and it's
like,
more like, you guys ready? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, can you believe?
Come on, Pittsburgh, make noise. Who likes the Steelers? Who likes, you know? You're a cheerleader. You're getting pumped up.
Dude, you'd be a really good warm-up.
They're riled up. So when you introduce the band, they are at 10. So the band doesn't have to warm them up with their first song because they always want to open strong and close strong, you know, and then they might play a couple of their stuff from the new album in between.
Right.
But if you know that going in, it's not painful at all. Like, people are like, oh, that's got to be brutal. It's not. I mean, a great
example. Is the money good?
Yeah. The money's good. It's because... And I get to go watch a concert. And I'm backstage at a concert.
It's every comic's question. The bottom line, like,
who books that?
And what's it pay?
But I learned a thing that I did right away, and this was a survival technique. It was not a trick that I like planned, but I went out and just pretended I was a roadie. I started messing with the instruments and doing checks on the mic. And then I started just yelling to the crowd, hey, who's ready? Hey,
really?
Come on, make some noise. And people are going crazy. And then I started going like, look, this guy in the front row, you got this kind of shirt. And then I would go in the material. Who's married? And then I'd go in the material. But then at the end of the show, I looked over and pretended I got a signal and was like, oh, they're ready to go. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bring to you.
Really?
Yeah. And I got off stage and people after the show were like, dude, you're like the funniest roadie ever. And that's such a better compliment than getting, you're a shitty comic.
Well, you as a comic, you did a great job tuning that guitar. I did a show once where like 20 years ago, I had opened for Jackie Martling. And the guy who booked the show, I don't remember his name. He was a young kid and he was booking shows.
This was still when he was on Howard.
Yeah, this is when he was big on Howard.
That's what I'm saying. This was 20 years ago. This was peak.
This is over 20 years ago, too. Yeah. I'm lying about it. It was probably 94, 95.
But even 20 years ago, it was 97.
He was huge.
Yeah.
And
just to put it in perspective.
Yeah, and it was a college. They were there, I think it was Ryder College. They were there for Jackie. It wasn't even like a comedy club. This was Jackie Martling, Bam Bam, comedy, you know. Night. Place is packed, and this kid got this booking somehow, and he asked me to open for Jackie. Okay, blah, blah, blah. He goes, well, I'm going to open, then I'll have you come out, and then Jackie. He said, and don't worry, man. I'm going to get them in the right place for you. Don't worry, man. Don't worry about a thing. All right, man. No, really, seriously, man. Okay, man. We start to walk to the stage, and the place is packed, and they're going, Jackie, Jackie, right? They're like, Jackie, and you see this kid start to walk up to the stage, and he literally stands behind a speaker. He like freezes.
Ooh.
And he gets behind the speaker, and I'm next to him
because
I'm
and
he
stage
goes
fright.
He takes the mic and he goes, how you guys doing? And I go, what are you doing? And they go, ah. He goes, who are you here to see? They go, Jackie. Who are you here to see? Jackie. He goes, well, he'll be out a little while, but here's Richie Byrne.
I was hoping that wasn't the story.
And you hear, boo! But I'm literally next to the kid. He's behind the speaker, and I'm going, you asshole. You asshole. And he's like, I'm sorry, man. He's handing me the mic.
Throws the mic out on the stage.
I go up, hey, how you doing? Boo, get off me. I go, who are you guys here to see? They go, Jackie. I go, who? Jackie. I go, who are you here to see? I did it like 10 times. Finally, they were like, Jackie. They were like exhausted, right? And I go, great. Well, Jackie will be on in a little while, but since you're tired, you can listen to me. And they
really?
Yeah. And they were like, that was cool. Like, they thought that was cool.
So,
and they listened to me.
The original question should have been, what's the deepest hole you've ever had to dig out of? And how's the quickest you ever dug out of it? That's crazy.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I
beat the shit out of that kid after the show.
You should. I got booked to open for Schimmel, and this was during his Howard run when he was just kicking ass. And I was on the show, and I was only like 6 months in. Like, I wasn't prepared to do this. And it was at a rock club in Long Island. And it was like standing room only. Like, it was like a music concert. Like, they were standing. There weren't seats because it would have taken up too much room. That's how packed it was. And they were there to see Schimmel. And the guy who, I think he's a radio personality, somebody, or maybe he's the guy who runs the venue, he brought me out on stage, and they didn't want anything to do with me.
Yeah.
Like, and I was dying, and it was bad. Like, I was in a really, like, uh-oh.
Right.
Uh-oh. I don't know what to do. And I finally, like, I had, you know, on every TV show that has stand-up comedy in it, every comic has that breakdown moment.
Right.
Where they, like, have a breakdown on stage, and it's, like, their learning moment. This was my breakdown
right,
moment.
Right.
I just, like, got real, like, serious, and I just looked at him. I go, listen, Schimmel was there. He was in the green room or whatever in the back, and I go, listen, Schimmel, Robert's not even here. His limo's not here yet. So you can either listen to me for until he gets here, or we can just turn music back on. But either way, I have to be up here, so I'll just sit in that stool, and we'll play music, because otherwise I don't get paid. And I was being completely honest. It wasn't like I was trying to be clever. I had a complete breakdown, and I just go, so you guys can either listen, or we'll just put music on, but I have to be up here until Robert comes out, shows up. And they just shut up. And I did like 5 more minutes, and they were going well. And I did the thing with the music where I looked over and go, oh, Robert's here. Hey, guys, who's ready to see your headliner?
Really?
And the crowd went crazy. And then when I brought him out, Schimmel, when he shook my hand, he goes, that was fucking brilliant.
You know who had great, at least he did. I haven't worked with him in a long time, but Brian Regan had the best audiences.
They my God. Always,
have you ever opened for Regan?
No, but I've been in the audience.
They are.
I have to be clean, right?
Yeah, but they are. Brian Regan and John Panette, like, their audiences took it personally almost, that, like, we're here and we're smart and we're going to listen to you. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're good, and even if you're bad, we're going to be nice. I've never, ever opened those two guys. I always remembered that they, and Panette almost insisted on it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Panette was, I mean, but both of those guys, that's the one thing I remember. Their audiences were always so giving to whoever was on the stage. And you're like, wow, how do you get that audience?
That's, you know?
And it says something about both those comics.
A real quick story. So we both went to Wagner. And I when I first started, this is over 10 years ago, I was doing the back of Charlie O's in like Times Square, you know. It was
Charlie
O's,
sure.
One of my first like non-open mic book shows, you know. And I went out front. Two girls I went to Wagner with. They were sitting right there having cocktails, and they had a third friend that I had never met. They're like, "Oh, this is our friend Joel. He was just doing a show in the back. We just randomly met up." And she goes, "Oh my God, you do comedy?" She goes, "My cousin does comedy." And I go, "Yeah." She goes, "I don't know if he's still doing it." I go, "What's your cousin's name?" She goes, Brian Regan.
I don't know if he's still.
And I had a look.
How could you not know?
Because if both you guys said it, I'd be like, oh, there's some bowel busting going on here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to look back. I looked up at her, and she was just looking at me like, is he still doing it?
Wow.
Kind of looking for the answer. I go, well, I haven't seen him in quite some time on the open mic circuit, but I heard he's.
But I'm sure.
I heard he's doing quite well.
I heard he's making a couple of dollars.
Yeah.
I think he's still out there.
Yeah. Is your family not close?
Do you know he has a brother who's even as a we dream to be him?
Right. Yeah, you told
his
me that.
His brother is so funny.
I didn't
funny.
Know that.
Oh, my God. His brother is as funny. Dennis.
I've never worked with Dennis. I've he's never, ever worked. Seen
as
him
funny as Brian.
Yeah, I heard he's great.
It's like, you know, you have the stories like the Gallagher and Gallagher 2. You know, where it's like, you know, one's actually talented, the other one's like, whoa.
Yeah,
these two are both like amazing.
Yeah, I heard Dennis is great.
I can't remember. He was on a DVD and it was so good.
I'll tell you a story. We were talking about who books that.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the comic line, right? You know?
Yeah.
And like the funny thing is when a comic dies, like,
yeah.
I mean, really dies, not on stage. And people are like, oh, it's a shame he's dead, huh? Where was he working next? You know, like comics. That's
oh
like an old.
God.
That's like an old
really?
Comedy. Joe, yeah, yeah. Wasn't he coming up? Like, it's, the opposite happened to me. I did a show at the Friars club about a year and a half ago, last year. It was about a year ago with and Meanie was on the show. And there was a group in the audience at the Friars that were there to see Meanie because they had a charity event and they wanted him to be in. So this woman had set it up where they come to see him at this show, and if they like him, they were going to use. But you know, it was Meanie. The odds were he was going to do it. You know, they were going to want him. Yeah. So after the show, these guys come up. They're like, "Man, you're really funny." I'm like, "Thank you." So Meanie goes, "Oh, these are so and so. They're here, you know, from a charity." And so 10 days later, Meanie dies. You know,
but he really,
yeah, 10 days after the show, it was that devastated me because I hadn't seen Kevin in years, and we had such a wonderful night together. He was such a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, that was like the best. Like, we weren't really close, but that night we hung out the whole night. We had a great time. So the woman who set this whole thing up had to go to the charity and go, that Kevin Meanie died. And they said, can we get the other guy?
Oh, Jesus.
So it was the, not like, it wasn't as rude as that, but it was the opposite of what normally happens.
Let's just,
they're like, all right, well, can we get that? And then I ended up doing it. And they were really sweet. They wanted me to say some things about Kevin. It was a really cool event. You know what I mean? But it was just funny that...
That's really some Hollywood stuff right there,
though. Yeah, isn't that
it's
funny,
really
though?
Cutthroat. We'll send a sympathy card. Can you get the other guy?
Yeah, can we... but still, I mean, life goes on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and but it's just funny that that's an old comedy joke of, oh, so-and-so died. Wasn't he working? Where was he working?
My God.
But this was the opposite of that.
His calendar.
And nobody would have laughed more than Meanie at that.
Oh, my God,
yeah. Oh, my gosh,
yeah. And I left the message on Meanie's voicemail the day he passed away because I got funding for a project that he was supposed to be involved
that's
in.
That's right. We talked. I forgot
about
it.
I left
him
a message like, hey, Kevin, give me a call back. It's so exciting. We got the funding for the project. I can't wait. And then that night I was at a thing and I got a text message from a Boston guy going, did Kevin really pass away or is Bobcat fucking with people? Because Bobcat put on Facebook or on Twitter,
right?
You know, rest in peace, Kevin Meanie, or one of the greatest, or something like that. And people thought like maybe he's fucking with him, like he had a bad show,
right?
And so Bobcat's fucking with him, and everybody was like, please let that be the case,
right?
You know, and
we did it. The show we did at the Friars was Comics Who Sing, Comics in Music. Stephen Scott ran it. It was his idea. It was a brilliant idea. So it was supposed to be you do your act and then you sing, or if you could put your singing into your or music, whatever. Because Wally Collins was the drummer.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was really.
That's Kevin's whole act.
It was really. Yeah. So at the end of the show, Stephen wanted us all on stage, all the comics, and they played Tequila. And whenever the band stopped, one of us had to go up to the mic and tell a street joke. So that was kind of cool.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, and it had to be like, but I'm bomb. It had to be fast. And Kevin.
It was all in rhythm.
Yeah. So when Kevin goes up to the mic and goes, I think we're talking about street jokes. He goes,
yep.
How do you eat a frog?
How?
You put one leg over this ear, one leg over this ear.
That's where we're going to end it, folks. Thanks for listening. We got more.
That's the last joke I ever heard Kevin Meanie tell. Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.